Hello everyone and welcome to the Institute of Leadership and Management's weekly news roundup podcast, where we take a critical look at a number of topical developments from the past few days with a leadership and management theme. I am Rod Jones, content manager at the Institute, and in this podcast we will be looking at news up to the 22nd of June 2020. Joining me to analyse these stories is Kate Cooper, Head of Research, Policy and Standards at the Institute. Hello Kate.
Hello Rod.
Well Kate, our first story asks if the gender pay gap report reporting should be reinstated. Calls have emerged for an end to the COVID-19 era pause on gender pay gap reporting following the release of figures indicating that the gap starts to open up in the first year of graduates' careers. In the highest earning bracket, representation of males doubled that of females, with 6% of men earning more than £39,000 one year after graduation compared to 3% of women. Jo Levinson, Director of Communications and Campaigns at Economic Justice Advocates, the Young Women's Trust, said gender pay gap reporting, suspended by the government during the coronavirus outbreak, needs to be reinstated immediately to shine a light on the inequalities existing in employers across the country. More work also needs to be done to ensure employers are transparent about pay and progression. Levinson added, "This isn't just the case for graduates either. Young Women's Trust research has previously found that women who train as apprentices are paid less too, leaving them up to £2,000 a year worse off." Kate, is the pause on gender pay gap reporting now untenable?
Well, the immediate answer, Rod, is yes, of course it is. I think we were making progress here because, as Levinson says, about the transparency. There are gender pay gaps. There are endemic inequalities in the way men and women are rewarded in organisations. And only by looking at that and measuring it can we hope to improve it and close that gap. And I'd argue also that, especially in the light of Black Lives Matter, we need to be doing pay gap reporting for ethnicity, all the different ethnic groups and how they are differently treated in the workplace, disability. It's not just enough to focus only on gender, as we know. So, yes, please reinstate it. There is absolutely no argument for not doing.
Okay. Thank you, Kate. Our next story looks at a report in the Times newspaper that Games Workshop, the company behind Warhammer models, is to pay back millions of pounds of furlough money received from the UK government. Charles Hall, head of research at Peel Hunt, the company's broker, said that he knows of several other companies that were also considering whether to pay furlough money back to the Treasury, in spite of having no obligation to do so. "They think it's the right thing to do," he said. Games Workshop, which has about 2,000 staff, mainly in the UK, said the downturn had not been as devastating as first feared because of a switch to digital sales, and Mr. Hall estimated that this move would cost a few million pounds. Other companies, including the Spectator magazine, have also announced plans to repay furlough cash. Kate, how should other leaders react to this moral stance taken by Games Workshop?
I think they should imitate it. Isn't that encouraging to see a senior leader say it's the right thing to do, and the moral imperative, not a commercial imperative? We won't like ourselves if we don't do this. It's obviously encouraging that they haven't suffered too much because of this switch to digital sales. But isn't that what happens to good leaders and managers? They make the right decisions, and that is not just about moral positions, it's how to run their businesses. So in a way, it's not surprising that they have weathered the storm better than other organisations that are not as values driven.
Okay, thank you, Kate. Our next story looks at research by Whereby that reveals that if we look at the video call experience, 42% of employees feel more comfortable conducting meetings via video call than in-person meetings. And 66% of employees feel they display a different persona on video calls to show how they act in the office. 57% of employees feel they have seen more mansplaining on video calls than they would do in traditional in-person meetings. And interrupting other speakers is the thing that most annoys people about professional video calls and meetings, with 36% citing this as their biggest cause of irritation. Kate, what does this survey tell us about the future of video calls?
I think think it's telling us that we need to develop a whole new etiquette and a new way of being in a meeting. I think it's interesting about the mansplaining and the interrupting and the other irritants that emerge from this research, because probably they happen just as much in face-to-face meetings, but we're not so attuned or aware because other things are going on around us. Whereas with the Zoom meeting, the video call meeting, we've just got a number of faces and we're so much more able to think, this bloke's been talking for a long time, telling me things I know, or this person's always talking over another person. So you're just that much more sensitive and maybe paying that much more attention. And I think that has a downside, of course, because that is quite tiring. I think we need to remember that if we book back-to-back video calls, give yourself a break in between them. But let us also think, how can we get the best out of these meetings and just be different?
Thank you, Kate. Our next story is taken from the conversation about the lack of diversity in the UK cabinet. As Black Lives Matter protests spread, the UK Health Secretary, Matt Hancock, was recently taken to task about the lack of diversity in the government of the Prime Minister, Boris Johnson. When pressed about the lack of black cabinet ministers, Hancock said that British Asian politicians currently occupy two of the four great offices of state, Home Secretary and Chancellor of the Exchequer. When his interviewer pointed out that she had asked specifically about black cabinet members, not Asian cabinet members, Hancock failed to acknowledge that the absence of black MPs at the top level was a problem, implying that current representation of the cabinet is enough. When pushed on his comments about the lack of diversity in the cabinet, the Health Secretary said, "It's diversity of thought. That's the really important thing when you're taking those big decisions around the cabinet table." Kate, can diversity of thought ever be a substitute for actual diversity?
No, because it's your lived experience as a member of an underrepresented group, as a man or a woman living with a disability, being part of the LGBT community, whatever your difference is, that gives you that diverse view of the world. And of course, people think differently. And this is such a cop-out as an answer. You know, it's almost like, well, some of us are extroverts and some of us are introverts and some of us are thinkers and some of us are feelers. And look how diverse we are. That's not what diversity means. And I think this is quite shameful in a way that this is offered as an excuse by somebody so senior. But it's not like he's unique in this. I think it's something we hear so often and is, of course, being challenged by Black Lives Matter movement. And as we saw in our recent webinar, you can't just put everybody who is not white into a group and say, well, there we are, we've got different representation from all of these others. That really has to be looked at.
Thank you, Kate. Our final story asks, how should leaders provide staff with greater autonomy? A direct link between the amount of autonomy employees have at work and their life expectancy has been uncovered in new research from the Indiana University Kelly School of Business. Gonzalez Mulay stressed, COVID-19 may be causing more mental health issues, so it's particularly important that work should not exacerbate these problems. This includes managing and perhaps reducing employee demands, being aware of employees' cognitive ability to handle demands, and providing employees with autonomy are even more important than before this pandemic began. Kate, what more could organizations do to boost their employees' job control and autonomy?
Well, as our research that we're publishing next week reveals, that home working that's been imposed on people because of COVID-19 is adversely affecting some groups more than others, particularly people living on their own. And therefore, the way they're managed needs to be more compassionate. We have to start with the situation, the context that the employee finds themselves in, and best support them. It is a call for a much more compassionate management style. And this research that we've talked about before reminds us how important autonomy is and having some degree of choice over how one spends one's working day, perhaps the order in which we do tasks, and how much that contributes to well-being.
Thank you, Kate. And that concludes this week's episode. Listeners can find further topical content in the News and Views section on the Institute's website at www.institutelm.com. And thank you once again, Kate, for your insights on these stories.
Thanks, Rod.